The following program represents the views of the speakers and not necessarily those of KCBX. KCBX welcomes the comments of those with divergent views. Our phone number is 1-800-549-8855. Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, social critic, mental health consultant. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. We invite your calls. Call Elizabeth at 781-3875 this hour. Hello, Elizabeth. What's going on this week?
Hi, Hank. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
So we have big news, right? My counterpart, Brian, who's usually sitting in your chair, is a new daddy as of today.
It is very exciting news. Yes, Kieran.
That's such a great name. And proud grandpa was running around with the picture. Just adorable. So I'm sending my love and best wishes out to Brian and his family. I miss you this week, but I'm excited to have you with me, Hank, because I ask every week, Hank, are you going to come call in? Are you going to hang out?
No.
And that's the response you give me every week. But today I have you in my captive audience and cohort. So Hank will be answering the phones today. We look forward to hearing from you at 781-3875. You know, today, I was listening to what you were reading when we started out, my little bio of who I am. A little bit tongue-in-cheek, a little bit true. All true, but a little bit tongue-in-cheek. And I was thinking, you know, this week's subject is about identity. And I want to talk about how it is we form who we are. You know, where do we come up with that biography when someone says, tell me a little about yourself? What is it we choose to say? So, Hank, when you meet someone and they say, tell me a little about yourself, what do you say?
I'm quiet.
Okay. And that's it?
No, it's true. I'm painfully shy unless I'm forced to talk on the radio. Mm-hmm. But once people get to know me, then oftentimes you can't shut me up. After a while, my sense of humor comes through and people seem to appreciate that, but on first meeting and in social situations, I'm very painfully shy and quiet.
So when someone says, hey, give me your bio, do you lead with I'm a husband or do you lead with I'm a radio announcer?
I usually say I work at KCBX. I've been married 14 years. You know, kind of my background, how long I've been at KCBX, which is 23 years now, and my college education, things like that. But as far as the personal life goes, aside from having a wife that I adore, I don't have a very active thing going on. I like to travel, but when I can. But it's mostly about working here.
I know, and that's what I always find interesting is that we tend to give our bio, you know, tell me a little about yourself, leading off with what we do for a living. Rarely is it, you know, who we are outside of how it is we bring home money into our life. And so there's a great deal of the richness of who we are as individuals that's missed when we don't get to give a little more full bio. And I think it's one of the main reasons why when I introduce myself or I do something like the reluctant therapist or when I'm lecturing at Cal Poly or meeting the public, I try to always lead with I'm a wife and mother. Because I feel like those are my primary responsibilities on the planet. And those are the things in my life that I think most about, that I care most about, that I put the most energy into. So I feel like that they identify me in a huge way. But it's unfortunate because in our culture, especially over the last 30, 40 years, we've really diminished the role of wife and mother or husband and father because, well, I think for many social reasons, but one of the main reasons is that it doesn't have the status in our culture that it did for hundreds of years previously. We've redefined what it is to be successful or to be someone of status. And so we tend to use that when we lead off on our biographies. You know, I am a radio host or I am a CEO of a company. We kind of downplay those parts that we really think about in a daily basis. So I wonder how much different our story would be if we led our biographies with, hey, I'm a wife and a mother. I tend to get very anxious about, you know, the health and well-being of my family. I get stressed when it's time for my show to go on the air. I'm extremely happy when I'm by myself, which a lot of people find really strange because I am in a social realm most of the time. But if we led with those things that we kind of struggle with, I wonder how that would change the dynamics of a lot of our relationships. Because the thing that's interesting is that what connects us to others, what the things that make other people feel more genuinely interested in us as people is not all the ways that we're fabulous, but generally all the ways we're a little foibled, right? It's more the ways that we struggle in our life that make people feel closer to us, that make us more endearing. And so I wonder what it would be like when we first meet people if we were to talk a little bit about those things that we struggle with, the things that we worry about, those things that keep us up at night. Because that's how we really relate to each other. That's how we get close. And that's why I love this radio show, because this is our opportunity to talk about those things that we do stay up at night wondering about. Am I normal? Do my feelings have validity? How can I do things differently in my life so that I have better, stronger relationships? And so I invite you to think about your story. Call in and tell me a little about yourself. What is it you say to people, and what is it you like to say to people? How would you like that story of yourself to be different? And there's two different ways that we can look at our story. One is, how do we introduce ourselves to the public when we are trying to work in a professional field? And how do we introduce ourselves to the public on a more personal level when we're trying to connect? Because it's interesting, it's easy to always put our show face forward, right? List all of the accomplishments that we have in our life as a way of introducing ourselves. And the interesting thing is that when we introduce ourselves in all the ways that we're extremely competent, we tend to not make the strong connections. So it's interesting about our biographies and how we determine what our story of our life is going to be, because as much as we like to think that our identity or our story is what we've created it to be, in a lot of ways, in most ways, our identity is really made up by three different things. One is the social construction of our identity. What does our relationships, our family, how have they determined who we are, because we play roles in all of our relationships. So in your family that you grew up in, if you're the oldest, youngest, or middle, people related to you given that role in the family, maybe you were the outgoing one, or you were the athlete, or you were the troubled one, or you were the funny one. You know, whatever that place was that you took on in your family really can impact how you determine who you are as an adult. It has a huge impact, especially when that story or that role that you took on in your family isn't one that you necessarily want to carry, right? You don't, carrying the one of being the troubled one or the one that never can quite get it together or always seems to fail, that can carry over into our adult lives and become that story that we tell ourselves. You know, I might meet you on the street and shake your hand and say, yes, I work at Cal Poly, or I have a radio show. But inside, what you don't know is that I also carry that story of, you know, having been kind of the tougher one to raise in my family, and the one that wasn't really academically focused. And, you know, those things about me, the stories that my family still joke and laugh about me, that kind of hold me back, that make me wonder if I am capable of doing all the things that I am pursuing, because the story of who I was in my family as a child kind of gets in my way. One of the funny stories or ironic stories in my family is that I really was the one that didn't really academically strive for excellence. I was the one who was always trying to do just what I needed to do to get by. And so the fact that I went on and got my master's and then I teach at Cal Poly is, I think, something of a wonderment for my parents and for my siblings, because really, that's what you do? Because I really was, that was not my trajectory. Actually, in sixth grade, my sixth grade teacher pulled my mother in for the conference, the school conference, and said, you know, Elizabeth will do okay if she can find employment where they pay her to talk. So look where we are, Hank. Sitting in our place of needing to talk.
Well, my mother was always a school teacher. She taught fifth grade for probably going on 40 years, and in the same school district that I went to. And she ran into my seventh grade teacher, and he asked about me and said, "Well, what's Hank doing?" And, "Oh, he talks on the radio." And he was flabbergasted. It was just like, Hank, the quiet guy that sat in the back and always kept his head down when I looked at him, he talks on the radio. And it's true. I mean, in that similar situation, I would still be the guy who sits in the back of the room with my head down. But, I found something that I loved, you know, working at this station. And so I do have a personality deep down in there, but it takes some digging to get it to come out.
Some pulling out. So yeah, it's not exactly the first thing about your story that people know, is that the warm and funny Hank lives inside there.
Yes, you're going to have to do some digging to get to that warm and funny Hank.
That is my goal. So The first part, as I said, of our identity comes from that construction within our family, you know, who our family kind of told us we were when we were growing up. The other part is the social construction of our identity. And that comes from, you know, our gender roles in our culture. You know, how do young boys behave? How do young girls behave? That's not necessarily biological facts, but a lot of it is social construction of what we've decided are the appropriate roles for young men and the appropriate roles for young women. And so we grow up being pressured subtly and not so subtly to take on those roles in our lives and to live that out. So whether or not we're comfortable with the traditional gender assignments and roles of being young men and young women, we are kind of forced by our society to live them out. The same with being wives and mothers or husbands and fathers. And then there's the whole message of what it is to be adequate in our culture. And we've talked about that, that the media pressure to be more beautiful, to be happier, to be thinner, to be more athletic, right? It's a never-ending pressure of ways that we are supposed to be changing ourselves, changing our identity to fit this one kind of global idea of what is normal or what is acceptable in our culture. And so that narrows really our opportunities for identity if we succumb to the pressure of the media. And we tend to be much more vulnerable to the messages of the media when we're in our young teens and early 20s and even into our 30s. And some people throughout their life continue to be bogged down by the media influence or the pressures of what they see externally as being valuable. But for our young children, it's really tough for them to find their own authentic voice because the pressures from the media and what our social expectations are so strong and feel so overwhelming that it's easy for someone who's younger and doesn't have a lot of experience to succumb to trying to fit into those things. And as soon as we start to succumb to what the media or our family pressures are to be who we want to be, we start to move farther and farther away from understanding what that authentic self is that we strive to be. And then finally, that third part of our identity comes from who we really are, from those authentic feelings and that voice inside of us, that desire that we have, that, you know, quiet place in Hank's head sitting in the back of the room, that even though you were, you know, shy in your classroom, somewhere in the back of your mind, you said, hey, but I have a voice in here. And it may not come out in class, but it's going to come out over the radio, or I'm going to find a way for my voice to come out.
It's true.
Except for now.
Except for right now. We were inviting your phone calls. The phone number here is 781-3875 if you would like to talk to with Elizabeth, the Reluctant Therapist.
Absolutely. And today, as I said, we're talking about identity. I'd love you to call in and tell me a little about yourself. Tell me your story. And how did you come up with the story? What messages did you get as you were growing up that told you here is who you are and here's who you should present yourself as being? You can find us on Facebook at The Reluctant Therapist. You can reach me by email at Elizabeth@TheReluctantTherapist.com. I always love to hear from you and continue the conversation. You can call in right now at 805-781-3875. It's 2:15, and we'll be back to take your calls.
This is KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara, public radio for the entire Central Coast. And Elizabeth, would you mind if I shared the note you got from our own representative, Katya Asajian?
I am so proud. Please
I'm very proud. Yes, it's a personally written note from Katya, who is now our District 35 Assemblyman. Dear Dr. Barrett, I wanted to pass along my congratulations on the success of your new radio show. The subject of mental health is a critical part of nearly every issue we confront as a society. Conversations about the subject remove stigma and lead to better informed decisions. Thank you for sharing your insights. Here's wishing to you the best in your endeavors. Signed, Katya Asajian, with an official gold seal on the front and everything.
So maybe when I meet people this week, I'll throw that out before I put my hand out.
Absolutely. We've got a couple of calls, so I need to answer the phones, but carry on.
Please, you have to be patient because Hank is by himself today, so stay on the line because he will get to you, and we'd love to hear from you and your thoughts on our topic of identity. And I want to thank Cacho for listening and your support, because I do feel very passionately about talking about our mental health, because it's those things that we don't talk about that start to give us trouble, right? It's those secrets that we keep. It's those beliefs that we had that I'm not okay, that if I said this out loud, people wouldn't like me, that I'm the only person who feels these things. It's when we hold those things in that we really get in trouble and our mental health starts to suffer. So my hope for this hour every week was for us to have this venue to be able to talk about our lives, our experiences, our feelings, and build a community around that so that we can strengthen our mental health as a community. Because the strength and well-being of our community depends on all of us taking care of ourselves and looking after each other. So Bruce, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Well, I just, first of all, it's a great topic. I think how we disclose ourselves or how we identify ourselves is certainly something that is interesting. I just was having that thought the other day, kind of talking with my wife, who's been struggling with some situations at work and getting quite disturbed with it. And then just a little reminder that we often do identify with our jobs, mm-hmm. first and foremost, in such a way that we sometimes mistake that for our own identity, and such that, you know, whatever, everything's going chaotic at work and disturbing, and just a reminder that that's not who you are. That's actually just a part of what you spend your time doing. It could be, as in your case, obviously your ability to dialogue with people is what you've turned into an occupation. But so many people identify with their work as who they are, and it's really kind of a shame, because I think so much more to the human possibilities, obviously, and how you identify yourself outside of the working world. So interesting. I really liked your introduction about being a mother and a wife, because obviously those are paramount to who you are and how you want to spend your attention and time. So anyways, that's just my comment from afar.
Well, and Bruce, I really appreciate that, because I think my question to you is twofold. One, how do we change that? You know, how do we encourage people to identify themselves with their passions more than with what they do to make a living? How do you introduce yourself?
Yeah, typically that's what I think normally, and again, it depends on the context. If I'm in a room making a presentation to somebody, you typically go into your qualifications, your background, how many years you've been doing it, your professional qualifications. But in a social setting, if it's a school-related event, I typically introduce myself as I'm the dad of my kid, you know. So I introduce, it depends on the context, I think, moreover. But obviously, occupation, what do you do for a living, comes up in the top three questions. So we jump to it right away. But, I don't know, interesting.
I know, it is definitely food for thought. And I appreciate you calling in and sharing your comments with us today.
Okay, thanks. I'll keep listening. Have a great show.
Thank you. I appreciate what Bruce said, because I think there is a change in how we introduce ourselves depending on whatever situation that adjusts. But the other thing I'm thinking about is the idea of identity and getting more control over identifying who we are and who we want to be. And by putting that story out into the public, can we make it come true? You know, do we have more control over our destiny if we start telling our story in such a way that we make it true? For example, my brother and I growing up always marveled at our friends who followed their passions for music or writing, poetry, whatever the arts were that they were most interested in. And they just started telling people, I'm a writer or I'm a musician or I'm in a band. And then they became that thing. And for the two of us, that was never really encouraged in our family. You know, you went with something that was much more practical, or something that someone told you you were. You know, you're good at sales, or, you're good at marketing, or you're a good athlete. It wasn't as much about what we were passionate about, but much more what we seemed to be most suited for. And so our friends that grew up and took on the arts as their livelihood, we're like, how did they get to do that? And as I got older, we got older, we realized, oh, because they told everyone they were. And just by the mere fact of identifying themselves with these passions, with their arts, people started to identify and relate to them from that perspective. So how would you introduce yourself if you were going to be the person you wanted to be instead of the person you felt you needed to be in the moment? I don't know. I'd love to hear your thoughts. 805-781-3875. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you can find us on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist, or by email, elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Hi, James. You're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Elizabeth. I'm an online listener and really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
The one thing that I struggle with is, you know, when I introduce myself, how do I know if I'm being true to my own beliefs or I'm just kind of following, you know, what everyone expects me to say? And it's, you know, it's something that I continuously struggle with, whether it's in a professional situation or a personal situation or even, you know, family interactions. You know, I kind of feel like I defer to what's expected of me as opposed to, you know, kind of what I feel.
Mm-hmm. So, James, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a business professional, you mm-hmm. know, and I work in a, you know, finance industry and, you know, 30-year-old male mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm a son and, you know, have a in a committed relationship and also a brother. But those aren't necessarily the things that always come out, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm introducing myself.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing you lead with, I guess, is your professional qualifications.
Typically, yes.
Yeah. And so how would you like to introduce yourself? What would you say? First things off the top of your head if someone said, so who are you?
I guess if I could choose, and I would say I'm passionate, you know, and I'm have a lot of energy. And those are the two things that, you know, I think about myself and whether it's about being in a relationship or being at work, those are the things that, you know, I identify with, you know, being passionate and having a lot of energy and kind of not never giving up. But, you know, when I discuss that with other people, it's I'm in the finance industry and, you know, I graduated from university and, you know, those type of items.
Right, just the biography. And I love those two things put together, especially for a 30-year-old male to say, hi, I'm James, nice to meet you. I'm passionate and I'm full of energy. And when I'm not, you know, exploring those things, I take care of financial business. But I think one of the things that's difficult is something I brought up earlier is that your age has a lot to do with it. There's a lot of pressure socially, you know, to kind of fill that role when we're in our teens and 20s and partially into our 30s, because we're kind of establishing ourselves in our culture, in our society, trying to establish our own personal status or respect from those in the community. Because when you're 30, you're still growing in your profession, correct? So
yeah.
There's not a lot of room for you to bring your personal flair. And so I'm wondering, you know, if maybe this fantasy I have of us being able to talk about ourselves or our identity freely based on who we'd like to be instead of who we are is maybe a gift of middle age, where you get to the certain point where it doesn't matter anymore, where you're, you know, 50 and you get to say, yeah, here's what I do to bring on the money, but here's the stuff I really love. And I wonder if that is just a product of your age at this point, that you're kind of stuck still in this growing who you are as a foundation and have to wait to share those inner passions.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because the expectation, you know, that I get when I introduce myself to somebody is, you know, first identify yourself with work and, mm-hmm. you know, what you can be and where you're going to be and not necessarily who I want to be.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because especially in a masculine communication, you know, when men speak to each other, just to be gender specific, but it can be women also, there is that bit of nonverbal jousting, right? Kind of authority. Hey, here's who I am and here's what I do. So this gives me, you know, I should be respected for what I do. You know, it's kind of like you're putting it out there because you're trying to establish who you are in the work community. And I think that can be liberating when we're trying to build our career. But I think, as you mentioned before, it can also be stifling because you're so much more than that piece of your life. And how great it would be to say, yeah, this is what I do, but let me tell you what I did this weekend, right? You know, either when hiking or whatever your passion is, and get to really talk about that. Because ironically, the things, as I mentioned earlier in the show, that bond us to other people are the things that we are passionate about or struggle with, and not necessarily the things that we are great at, you know, the things that we already excel at. People go, yeah, that's great, you excel at that. But what I love about you are the things that are quirky or the things you're really passionate about.
That's very insightful.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to call, and I encourage you to grab onto the passion piece and figure out a way to work that into your introductions.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call, James. So we welcome your calls at 805-781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about identity and our story, and how do we come up with this story of who we are? What's your story? How did you determine who you are on a daily basis? Is this something that your family told you you were going to do? Are you a product of our social constraints? Or is this something that you've decided for yourself? As I mentioned before, my brother and I really look back on our lives and have laughed about how we would have done things differently if given the opportunity to just kind of explore the things we were really passionate about. Because my brother is a closet garage band guy and has, you know, great musician, has a lot of fun with it. But in his daily life, you know, he's a much more serious person. So if he had started, you know, following the path of music, where would he be today? So how do we determine who it is we're going to be? And it's interesting because there is this fine line, you know, between the truth of who we are and delusions about who we think we are. And the thing that I always find interesting is that the people who really need that creativity the most, the freedom to say, you know what, here's the things that I'm really interested in, and I'm going to start telling people, you know, that I am a gardener, an organic gardener, and I'm not really just a lawyer. I'm really an organic gardener by trade or by heart. That's my passion. And if we just started telling people those things, would that make it come true? The people who really need the freedom to do that tend to never get the encouragement to be their passions. And then those people who are a little marginal, maybe who shouldn't be following a passion that is out of their skill set or maybe out of their realm, tend to feel the most free to go for it. I love to use the example of American Idol has a lot of those people who have self-identified as being singers and this is what they do, but maybe that is more of a delusion than a truth. So there is that fine line when we talk about mental health, about, you know, what we are capable of and just aren't allowing ourselves to do, and maybe being a little delusional about what we want to do and probably shouldn't. So what are your thoughts on this? 781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we welcome Margie to the conversation. Margie, how are you?
I'm okay, Elizabeth. I really appreciate your program.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you called in.
Yeah, I want to bring to the conversation the idea of developing new identities as we develop and grow. I'm a 74-year-old woman with 6 kids and 12 grandchildren. My identity has changed so much, and I'm in the process right now of going on a different path, because what served me when I was primarily a parent, although I've always been a music teacher, and that is, music is my passion, but what served me then, and what I was very good at then, very effective, isn't serving me anymore. I have a daughter who, when I was 26, was hit by a car and is brain damaged. And so she's both physically and mentally limited. And, of course, and then I have 2 other daughters around that time, too. But and some stepchildren.
A big family.
Yeah, but my prime cause of even being alive for a long time was to take care of my daughter, who is brain damaged, and, of course, my other kids, too. And I was very much the 50s Susie Homemaker, which I had been encouraged to be, but always was rebellious. And I think an interesting part of my story, Elizabeth, is that my brother is 5 years older than me, and he was always ambitious and brilliant and the head of everything, and ended up at 45 being the vice CEO of UNICEF. We're living and traveling all over the world. And I just rebelled from the get-go. I didn't care about grades. You described yourself earlier, and that was me. Didn't care. Just didn't matter.
So where are you, tell me where you are now, Margie. What's the shift you're making?
Yeah, the shift I'm making right now is that my full participation in my daughter's care and the my participation in one of her son's drug addiction. And basically my full participation in the workings of my family have to change because my stress receptors are not receiving very well anymore. Mm. And it's making me truly physically ill.
Yes.
However, in my story, to be very brief, after a very short period of time, my handicapped daughter's father bailed out, left the family, and and I have been it for a long time. And big job, and became even more rebellious and even more assertive and, if you will, aggressive. So I have taken care of business, but now I find that when I jump in, you know, with that Red Cross badge on, after the fact, I find my blood pressure going up dangerously to the point of stroke. I have several physical manifestations of the fact that the last doctor I saw in the emergency room said, you just can't do this anymore.
So
your body is too old.
It's a long time to take a lot of stress. Our bodies only have a certain amount, right, that they can handle, as our psyches can only handle so much. So I just briefly tell me then, who is Margie coming this next decade?
Margie is a woman with a great passion and energy and a love of life who has to, quote, let go, unquote, of the responsibility that I have been forced to take on since I was 26. And I have to let go of at least part of it and focus on me.
Well said. Well said. And I think I really appreciate your call, Margie, because it takes a lot of courage to realize that at some point we have to pull the oxygen mask right onto our face first before we can be of any service to anyone else in our family and to anyone else. And you've carried this, you've carried your family strongly for many, many years. And I just want to give you my permission, as if it matters at all, but my encouragement and permission to own your passion and your energies, to take a step aside and to let your family find their feet underneath themselves for a little bit. Because I think what happens a lot of times for very capable women like Margie is that they get so good at carrying the family doesn't really learn how to carry themselves without that strong presence. And so one of the most difficult transitions is from being the heart of the family, from carrying the family and stepping aside and trusting that your family will find their way. It might not be as smooth as it was when you were totally in charge, but they'll find their way. And the more they find their way, the more you'll feel a little set free. The more you'll feel the pride instead of the burden. And I encourage you to take those steps. The phone call to me was a great start of courage, of saying who it is you're going to be, Margie. And I really appreciate you taking the time to call. And I appreciate other calls. We had Jack from Atascadero, or we might have lost him, but Jack, call on back. 781-3875 is our number. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I really look forward to hearing from you. We'll be back to take your calls.
This is Public Radio KCBX, serving the entire Central Coast, KCBX. Stay with us at 3 o'clock. We'll have Fresh Air and a news update from NPR at 3:01. Also, we'll be going on the air with our Spring Pledge Drive coming up this coming Monday, a week from yesterday. But there's no time like the present to renew your support for KCBX or become a first-time subscriber. Do it by midnight this Sunday, and you'll automatically be entered in a drawing for a third-generation iPad. Make your pledge at any time online at kcbx.org. And Elizabeth, perhaps this is something better discussed off the air, but what is in the works for a Pledge Drive Reluctant Therapist?
Oh, my goodness.
Have you not even thought about that yet?
I haven't, but there are a lot of great topics. And one is, you know, our mental health in many ways is determined by how much service we give back to the community, that our well-being, according to the World Health Organization, is in many ways determined by how connected we feel to the community and how much we feel like we have a purpose. So I think maybe our Pledge Drive topic will have to be about how we feel connected to our community and improve our mental health at the same time.
Or you can pledge early and get the iPad.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. I don't even know how much fun that would be. I could be iPadding while I'm on the air, looking up little topics and Skyping with my listeners instead of being on the air, although that might frighten them. So when we talk about identity, Hank, you know, one of the things that I mentioned earlier is that in some ways, who we're told we are growing up can limit us and kind of prevent us from really experiencing those things that we want to in our life, or we lose our courage, or it takes us until we're, you know, 74 to finally feel like, okay, enough's enough. I'm going to, you know, take charge and be who I am. But a couple of the ways that we get thrown off while we're growing up is when we encounter rough spots. If we go through a period of time where we might be feeling depressed or feeling anxious or, you know, struggling with our career choices or struggling in our marriage, but mostly with transitions in our life, like if we grieve a loss or we've had the end of a relationship and you start to feel depressed or anxious, and if you go in and get help from, you know, a mental health professional, one of my concerns is that quite often we end up becoming diagnosed by the mental health professional. And through that diagnosis, we start to identify ourselves as that diagnosis instead of who we are as a person. And that's one of my great concerns, one of my reluctance in the reluctance therapist is this need to diagnose people and to give them a label. Because once we start to label people, we alter their ability to own their identity, to own who they are, and they start to change their personality to fit what they think that diagnosis is. They start to introduce themselves as that person who's depressed. I'm a person who's depressed. You say, I have depression. And once we start to own those things, they start to really bog us down. Jack, you're on the air with a reluctant therapist. What's on your mind today? Glad you called back.
Well, first I want to tell you that I'm really glad that you are there and that your program is there. I think it's another great thing that KCBX has done is have you there.
Thank you.
And I love the subject of identity, mm-hmm. and I was watching the way that I'm sort of a layman psychologist who became a computer nerd instead. But I was watching the way that you have handled that subject, and it's marvelous.
Thank you. So tell me a little about yourself.
I'm a person with no identity, and this is it's hard work. I've been trying for 10 years to finish a book that's called The Mini-Me, M-A-N-Y-M-E, The Mini-Me, because I think that when we try to define ourselves, the other end of that transaction is requesting something. They want to know who we are, or they see that we show who we are by the way we dress, with whom we associate, and on and on and on. And I think the healthier we get, the more we turn that around, and the more we allow ourselves to be whatever is needed for the situation. So in my book, I say, okay, if there are 16 Jungian personality types, for example, what is the personality that I need for this project right here? Can I try to wrap those qualities into my current behavior? When that's done, then I can move on to what's needed next. And that allows the core of me to be ever there, but not so radically and not so easily displayed for everyone else to see. Does that make any sense?
I do. I love that topic, and it's funny, Jack, that one of the books that led me into doing this profession was written by Jean Shinoda Bolen called The Goddess in Every Woman. And she talks about the archetypes and that, you know, we're not that mysterious because we tend to fall into certain personality traits in our lives. And when we identify those traits, it helps us to formulate our authentic personalities. And ideally, we want to have a little bit of all the archetypes inside of us so that we can draw on our warrior woman when we need it or our heart-based woman when we need it. But one of the things that Jack said, which I think is so interesting, is this idea of our ability to choose who it is we want to be on a daily basis by how we dress, what we eat, who we hang out with, the music we listen to, all those things formulate our identity and make our life rich and worth living. So what do you think about that? Thanks for the call, Jack. I invite other calls at 781-3875 for the Reluctant Therapist. Jerry, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Okay. You guys have been talking about the personality traits of question who you are and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Now my concern is appearance.
Appearance.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I'm 61 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I just got a haircut. Up until then, my hair was like 14, 15 inches long. And my brother's just jamming me continuously about, man, why don't you get a haircut? Da-da-da. You know, people's appearance, they see you, and then they automatically form an opinion of who you are and what you do and this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
Follow what I'm saying?
I do.
The appearance, once somebody sees me and they say, well, he's just an old hippie. I am an old hippie, you know, but it's the kind of thing of I could only take so much of this dog and get a haircut. That finally I went and got it cut, and now it's about an inch long.
So how did that change how you feel about yourself?
It doesn't particularly, because, one, I enjoy my solitude. I live alone. I pretty much keep to myself, and I enjoy that aspect of it. Now, my oldest brother, he's, you know, 64. He's always saying, be sociable, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to be. I mean, I want my, you know, solitude, and, you know, I don't see it as a loneliness. I see it as an aloneness.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
which is,
I like that.
Which is interesting, because I wonder how the long hair helps send the message of wanting to keep to yourself.
Well, that's a good part of it. And the thing about it, I mean, I care a certain amount about my appearance, but it's not important to me. I mean, I may look in the mirror once a day, if that. You know, I mean, it's not enough keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah, and I appreciate you
calling. This has really been bothering me because of the type of thing of my reasoning, not even excuse, my reasoning has been, hey, you know, I'm not worried about what other people think of me. Have you heard the saying, it's not what other people think of you, it's what you think of them?
No, but,
you know, I mean, that's basically been a philosophy of mine for a long time. You know, but I mean, again, I'm coming back to the appearance.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I got a cousin that when I get around him, I mean, he's, you know, it's dirty and funky, and I just say, well, you know, hey, you know, I don't want to be, you know, associated with him because of his appearance.
I appreciate your take on that, because I think appearance is another piece of how we project our identity. You know, sometimes we might feel really locked into behaving a certain way because of our responsibilities, needing to take care of a family, or, you know, going out to work outside the home, or whatever those pressures they are that are out there that determine who we're going to be in our life, that sometimes our appearance, how we dress, how we wear our hair, our makeup, how we carry ourselves, is one of the few ways that we get to actually personify our feelings about who we are, right? To project who we are out into the world. I remember when I was in college, my favorite act of rebellion, because I wasn't hugely rebellious, but my favorite act was dyeing a great portion of the back of my hair fuchsia pink, which is a little common right now, but imagine quite a few years ago, it was for me pretty rebellious. But it was a way of saying, hey, I might look like kind of a student athlete, straight girl, you know, from the Bay Area, but down deep inside, I am a wild girl who has some fuchsia hair. I don't know. I think appearance is a lot to do with how we start to reflect our identity into culture. Amy, you're on the air with The Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. And I've really been enjoying your show in the last few weeks as I've just discovered you.
Thank you.
I just kind of came in later in the show and heard you talking about you and your brother discussing your friends who had been able to just pursue their passions without question.
Yeah, they just became who they said they were.
Yeah, and in the last 6 or 7 years, I started aggressively pursuing my art, which has really been who I am, you know, as in my heart since I was a child, although I didn't pursue that as far as my education. Mm-hmm. So now here I am nearly 40 and decided to finally go for it. And a big part of that transition for me was telling people when I introduced myself, I'm an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it was really hard.
I imagine.
I hadn't quite convinced myself. But the more I did it and the more I repeated that, the more I started to believe it as well. And then it just started to feel much more natural. And then people started to associate that with me. And instead of, oh, this is what I do for a living, and I paint sometimes,
mm-hmm.
it was more like, I'm an artist, and I also do this as a living, you know, something else on the side. And so although it was really tough in the beginning, for me it was a big step in making that transition and really starting to put myself out there in the art world.
That's fabulous. And so when you introduce yourself, when someone says, tell me a little about yourself, what are the first three things that come out of your mouth?
I'm an artist.
Fabulous.
That's the first thing I say. And then I say, and I also do this and that mm-hmm. on the side, you know, to make a living.
And I hear the change in your voice as soon as you say, I'm an artist. The brightness comes through. I mean, it's clearly who you're passionate about being.
Right. And like you said, it was... it's that transition from, like, one of your callers was talking about his work with the financial mm-hmm. industry. You know, that may not be who you are. It's just what you do. Whereas, you know, the art for me is who I am. You know, it's so much of me, and it's not about making money or not. It's who I am.
Absolutely. Oh, I appreciate you calling in and sharing that. And hopefully it'll encourage other people to start speaking through their authentic self, right? To start talking about who we are from who we believe we should be and not who we've been told we're supposed to be.
Yes. Have the courage. Make it happen.
Exactly. Thanks for calling in, Amy. Enjoy your day.
Thank you, Elizabeth. You too. Bye.
It's about 10 to 3. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about identity and who do we have the nerve to say we are. Who do you think you are? I look forward to hearing your phone calls, 781-3875. We're on the air with James. James, what's on your mind today?
Well, hi, Elizabeth. Great show. I had just a quick question about it, in positioning yourself. Do you always introduce yourself in your mind in the same way, no matter what the social situation? In other words, is there a Facebook me and then a LinkedIn me?
Hmm.
And might I just, you know, couch myself differently at a cocktail party or a kid's soccer game than I might at a mixer?
Absolutely. I mean, there's definitely different personas that we put out into the world depending on the social situation. I think the part that kind of sticks with me is how locked in we start to feel when how we describe ourselves or introduce ourselves starts to feel limiting, right? That it starts to feel inauthentic every time we say, you know, hey, here's where I work and here's where I live and I'm, you know, this is what I do. If it starts to feel limiting, it starts to change how we feel about ourselves. And I guess if you can slip in, you know, the irreverent part, I always try to, you know, as I said, I lead with wife and mother because to me, that's almost a rebellious statement in today's culture, right? So when you introduce yourself, how do you slip in a little bit of that authentic who you are into social situations that might not call for it and see how that changes the interaction?
I see. It's less robotic and a little bit more personalized and warm and irreverent.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think the more that we put a little of our true personality into our social life and our professional life and our personal life, we start to really own that part of ourselves more and it becomes more natural. And people tend to warm up to us more. I mean, I think that's what I said earlier in the show is, you know, how much more interested are you in people when they tell you the things they struggle with than when they tell you all the things they excel at?
Very good. I appreciate the feedback.
I appreciate your call, James. Enjoy your day. So you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I really appreciate all of the thought that goes into this idea of identity. How do you introduce yourself? What's your story? Or how would you like to introduce yourself? I'd love to hear that. We can encourage each other through this community of radio to be who we want to be, especially because we have a little opportunity to maybe be who we want to be without anyone seeing who we are. I think that's one of the reasons that Hank and I always loved radio so much is that it gives us this opportunity to put out our true and inner spirit without having to look people in the eye. We kind of sneak in the back way with our identity. As I mentioned earlier, the only time I get concerned about how we present ourselves or how identity affects our life is when we start to take on personality traits or descriptions that have been given to us through the form of diagnosis. When we start to take on the traits of being a depressed person because we feel depressed, because they're two different things. You know, going through a period of depression does not make you a depressed person. And you have to separate those two things out to really have the most success in healing yourself. And that's when we start to get into trouble, is when we start to own the characteristics of depression. And then we start to behave in that way. We start to change our life to model what it is to be depressed. The same with our children. When you have a child that shows attention issues or is struggling in school, and then we go through the process and our child gets diagnosed with a learning disability or maybe with ADD, to start treating our children like they are that diagnosis really hinders their ability to grow and develop and to find their own true path. So I really encourage all of you, when you're looking at your life, are you living your life by how you perceive yourself or by how you've been told by others to perceive who you are? We have about 10 minutes to go. I have time for a couple more phone calls at 781-3875, our conversation with a reluctant therapist. Vernon, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to talk about this issue of personality more as if it were the science of perspective.
Okay.
Many of our perspectives are obviously shaped by our experiences and the feelings that we have during those experiences. And myself being a person that has grown up in what I like to call a closed-door community, where our experiences, as bad as they are at home, are never really allowed out. And, of course, that affects our confidence and emotions and trying to convey who we really are.
How has that shaped you?
I'm sorry?
How has that shaped you, that experience?
Well, for me, my entire youth was spent not knowing who I really am because the perspectives that I was provided were violent and not very conducive to what I was being told outside my environment at school or socially abroad was completely alien, but I'm sure that I'm not the only one.
Absolutely not. And how have you overcome that now as an adult? Or are you still working through it?
I'm right now in the last 3 years of having just so much journaled who I thought I was and realizing that these things were, projections of society and things that intervene with what I like to call true compassion, which is something that everybody craves.
Absolutely. And
I think that many of us that are not receiving the levels of compassion that we need to develop our own confidence in who we are is an epidemic proportion in this country.
I agree. And I wonder, you know, how different we all would be with getting just enough compassion for who we are, right? Having just one person recognize our heart when they talk to us can change a whole life. You know, how different your childhood might be if one person had turned and just saw you through your heart and not the circle of violence or wherever, you know, your life was at that time. It's those simple things in our life that can change the whole trajectory of our feeling about who we are. So how do you take your experience now and pay it forward, Vernon? How do you change it for someone else?
Oh, well, I've been a massage therapist and an active spiritual member as often as I can be to my family and even strangers that I meet. I'm hoping to extend the gift of compassion that we are all so obviously craving, while as much keeping compassion for myself, which is, of course, a struggle when you feel at odds with economy, at odds with politics, at odds with religion. Mm-hmm. There are many social stigmas, so many to the point of it crowding out the issue of true humanity.
I agree. I think it's very difficult to get in touch with our authentic self, our mature soul, when there's so much noise in our culture trying to draw us other ways, right? Make more money, buy a bigger house, buy more things, take more trips. You know, there's always the noise of things we should be doing instead of encouraging us to look inward and to really nurture our compassionate self. And I love that you turned your life experience into being a massage therapist, because touch is such an essential piece to our developing compassion and for understanding who we are. When someone reaches out and touches us, it opens our heart and our soul in ways that are unimaginable, almost more than words, right? Just that one reaching out of someone's hand into your life can change someone profoundly. So I appreciate the work that you're doing, Vernon. I appreciate your call.
Thank you very much, and have a nice day.
You too. And I appreciate all of the calls today, and you're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. This show is very special to me, and I appreciate you being a part of it. You can continue the conversation on my Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or reach me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Until next week, I encourage you to listen fully to those in your lives. Take the time to connect, tell your story to others, and remember that we do have the answers inside. We just need to find a way to hear them. Thank you for listening. I'm Elizabeth Barrett.
Thank you, Elizabeth. This is KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Arto, and KSBX Santa Barbara. Public radio serving the entire Central Coast. It's just about 3 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, join us for Fresh Air. At 4 o'clock, Marketplace comes your way, followed at 4:30 by NPR's All Things Considered.